Hello, welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Evan Brand. Thanks for joining me. I'm board certified in holistic nutrition, also a functional nutritional therapy practitioner. I run an online functional medicine practice at my site, evanbrand.com. What I do is I help people that have digestive issues, mood issues, sleep, skin, hormone imbalances, children on the spectrum, nonverbal children, children with behavioral issues. Children are in big trouble these days. I mean, some of it can be saved for a whole nother podcast, but there's a massive rise in sleep apnea among children. And Dr. Weston A. Price, his amazing book, Nutrition and Physical Degeneration, that is based on his journey around this planet. In the 1920s, looking at tribal cultures, he never found any issues with their palates, with their teeth, with their face or dental structure because of decades and decades of processed food. And as the generations get sicker, the facial deformities that we have, the smaller palates, the smaller jaws have led to massive sleep apnea, which then drives a lot of mood issues. So more on that really soon, but I don't want to get too distracted. But my practice, I try to help all these different issues with children. We have an amazing show coming out very soon with a mother of a child who was having major speech issues and was on the spectrum, and he's made massive, massive recoveries. If you want to get some functional medicine lab testing done, this is incredibly valuable. A good friend of mine, Paul Saladino, he just did a video on his YouTube channel about his blood test. The problem is blood doesn't show enough. We've run functional labs on him, and I want to run more functional labs on him and do a piece of content about it. So maybe you should go over to Paul's Instagram page or maybe his YouTube page. We'll put the link in the show notes. That'd be a great way to do that. Maybe we'll pressure him to do this, but go over to Paul's YouTube video where he reviews his blood work, and you'll see a comment there by me. Maybe you could leave a comment there and just say, Paul, do functional labs with Evan, something like that. And let's see if we can get him to open up about this, because I want to show that blood work is not enough. And even in a healthy person, on the blood, you can have issues on the functional medicine side, meaning nutrient deficiencies, amino acid problems, brain chemistry imbalances, parasites, gut inflammation. And I help people resolve those issues that we find on those functional medicine labs, which in turn transforms their health in regards to their energy, their mood, their sleep quality. There's so much benefit we see from these functional medicine things that we're implementing. So that's what I do. Aura Roots, A-U-R-A Roots.com is my professional supplement company where you can get access to incredible quality products such as my enzymes like Pure Digest to help you digest your foods better, my GABA chewables to help you calm down, my Super Sleep to help regulate your sleep rhythm and your circadian rhythm. And there's much, much more there, like our grass-fed beef organs, which are incredibly nutrient-dense capsules, an easy way to get organs in your diet. There's probiotics and many other things. So check out AuraRoots.com. Hydration Essentials, that's our electrolyte. We just got a brand new batch of that. So I'm throwing a lot at you, and sometimes when you give people too many decisions, they make no decision. So if you get one thing, check out Hydration Essentials, our best-selling electrolyte. It's incredible. It will keep you well, especially with the addition of vitamin C in there as well. Now, without further ado, we're going to be interviewing Paul Austin. He's a prominent figure in psychedelics. He's guided millions of people to safe and meaningful psychedelic experiences through his work in the company that he founded called Third Wave. Featured in Bloomberg, Rolling Stone, BBC's Work Life, to name a few, he's curious about the convergence of psychedelics, personal transformation, and professional success, and how they weave together to help form a meaningful existence. Paul empowers leaders, creatives, pioneers to leverage psychedelics for profound personal and professional growth. He views utilizing psychedelics as a refined skill cultivated through mentorship, exploration, and purposeful use critical for humanity's ongoing evolution, which I totally agree with. So without further ado, let's welcome Paul to the show. Hey, Paul, thanks for joining me. We have Paul Austin here, the CEO and the founder of The Third Wave. And I want to ask, what is the first and what is the second wave? Why Third Wave?
It's a good starting point. You know, I was in Budapest in 2015. So my path really in the last 12 years has been largely as a nomad, a quote-unquote digital nomad, and in 2015, I was living in Budapest, and we were visiting Third Wave Coffee Spot. So Third Wave Coffee is think of it as, you know, it's like intelligentsia, Stumptown, these sort of hipster artisanal cafes where you get a nice swan on your cappuccino. These are third wave cafes. The first wave being Folgers, the second wave being Starbucks and Pete's, and the third wave being this approach. And I also happened to be under the influence of LSD as I was visiting, microdosing LSD, some of these third wave cafes, and was with a couple friends, and we were just rapping about the future of psychedelics and how this could very well be the next cannabis and, you know, could help a lot of people. And sort of this idea just came up of, oh, this is the third wave of psychedelics. The first wave being ancient and indigenous use. And I use those two words with intention. Ancient, I would consider to be Greece, ancient Greece, that Plato, Aristotle, Marcus Aurelius participated in this experience called the Eleusinian Mysteries, where they drank a beverage called kukion, which is made from ergot, a fungus that grows on rye, the same fungus that LSD is made from. And then you also had the ancient Vedanta scriptures, which are some of the oldest scriptural texts from India, talk about soma. And a lot of hypotheses is that this was psilocybin mushrooms. So in these ancient scriptures and texts, we have evidence of psychedelic use, and we also have evidence of psychedelic use within indigenous communities. So ayahuasca in the Amazon, something called Yopo, which is 5-MeO in the Amazon. Evidence goes back almost 15,000 years for the use of peyote in Mexico, the cacti. So there's a rich lineage of psychedelic use as a human species, which the vast majority of people just are not aware of whatsoever. They think LSD and mushrooms and MDMA are very much a product of the 60s and 70s, but in fact, our lineage with them goes back way, way longer. And then the second wave was the reintroduction of psychedelics into Western culture with the invention of LSD in 1938. And LSD was a heavily studied medicine. There were over 1,000 clinical papers published on its efficacy to treat addiction, anxiety, depression, autism, OCD in the 50s and 60s. And unfortunately, it became associated a little bit too much with the anti-war movement, the protests against the Vietnam War, the sort of hippie raver counterculture of the 1960s, and it was prohibited globally by 1971. And so this third wave of psychedelics is, how do we take the best of the first wave, which is ritual, tradition, lineage, even a sense of connection to nature, and how do we combine that with the best of the second wave, which is science, objectivity, precision medicine, safety and ethics, and create a third wave movement that is both ancient and indigenous in its practices, but also modern and cutting edge in how we choose to apply it in the real world. And I think microdosing, we'll talk about microdosing in our conversation today. I think microdosing is the perfect bridge for that. You know, what I often say is the issue wasn't LSD necessarily in the 60s. It was just that we were doing too much of it, and that microdosing a lot of these psychedelics can have phenomenal benefits without some of the risks that people perceive as part of working with these medicines.
Yeah, well said. And I just saw this was an article that came out. It was just a few years ago, it looks like, but you know how sometimes they find things in caves and they don't publish it for years. But there was a 1,000-year-old sacred bundle that they found. I guess it was in this, it looks like a cave or just, I don't know, some kind of little cavern in Bolivia. And it was a leather bundle. Okay, yeah, here we go. Buried in a cave in the Bolivian Andes Mountains, 1,000-year-old bundle, and they found traces of 5 different plant-based psychoactive substances. So DMT, harmine, which are key active compounds in ayahuasca. And then, let's see. So they actually had cocaine, which I thought that was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what this one is here. Do you? Benzo?
It's anxiolytic. It would be like anti-anxiety medication to some degree, like a natural one. And then bufotenin, which is the first one there, is called, that's 5-MeO-DMT. basically.
So and that, this was that, in a fox snout. How cool is that?
That's so cool.
Gosh. It's amazing. And so basically here, this just said, hey, this discovery adds to the growing body of evidence of ritualistic psychotropic plant use going back millennia.
Millennia.
I know. It's incredible to think just how much we still haven't found. I'm glad we found this, though, and they're still able to extract it and prove what the heck is there. It's just amazing. And I was looking up this stuff here. How do you pronounce that? Kaikion?
It's technically Kukion.
Oh, Kukion.
It's spelled as Kaikion. Yeah, that's okay. I learned that as well.
And so this is I guess they painted this. This is a museum in Athens that was 490 to 480 BC.
Which is right around the time of, it's right before Socrates, right? Socrates existed, I think, around 420 to 360 BC, I want to say. So it was right before the time of Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle, around the time of Pythagoras. And there's, you know, people basically think all of the major Greek philosophers and thinkers participated in these Eleusinian mysteries because it was like what they had a quote that was like, you have to die before you die. So when you die, you don't die. And there was another quote that said, life would not be worth living without Kukion, without this potion, this beverage that they created. And it's still unclear the exact ingredients. There have been a lot of people who have tried to recreate the potion, but we do know ergot, which is this fungus that grows on rye, the same thing that LSD is made from, is central to it. And this is why I love tracking it, because there's a reason LSD came back on the scene in the 1940s, and there's a reason it was so widely used, because from a sort of deep lineage perspective, we know that substance super well. We don't, mushrooms are more the Mazatec in Mexico. Peyote is obviously Mexico and South America, but acid, LSD, is something that's very special and unique, I think, to our Western culture and Western lineage.
Amazing. I mean, it makes you wonder about the architecture too, like the ancient Greece architecture and stuff. And if those guys were influenced back then with psychedelics, because you look at modern agriculture, or not agriculture, well, that's a problem too, but modern architecture. And I saw a McDonald's building going up. And it's so stark and dead and lifeless. It's just flat and modern, and there's just nothing to it. There's no life. I mean, you look at a building like the Parthenon, and it's like, oh my God, how did they design something so beautiful and just elegant? Have you ever seen a lot of the buildings from the Chicago World Fair? I think it was like 1918, all this crazy Victorian, European-inspired.
Deco, a lot of Art Deco at that point in time. So a lot of architecture up until the last 100 years has had a deep spiritual influence, right? Because churches were largely responsible for developing a lot of the chapels and architecture. And in the last 100 years, as God has died, as Nietzsche predicted at the end of the 19th century, modernity has become, as you mentioned, very sterile, neutral, boring, machine-like. It doesn't resonate with us as humans anymore, which is why so many of us, when we live in cities and urban environments and even suburbs, and we're surrounded by these four walls and we're not in nature that much, it just feels like it weighs on our soul. There's something that's out of alignment. And that was not the case in ancient Greece. That was not the case for most of human existence, right? We're now in this phase of, I would say, domestication. And a lot of people are, I think, without them being aware of it, they're coming back into psychedelics for this sort of rewilding, to get back in touch with this more primordial kind of ancient aspect of who we are.
Yeah, well said. And I've looked at functional MRI studies. They show this picture of a brain on psychedelics. Specifically, it was about psilocybin, showing how it's literally reconnecting parts of the brain that maybe were never connected before, maybe connections that were lost that now somehow they're formed again. This is helping people to reverse trauma. This is helping people with anxiety, depression, suicidal issues, etc. Maybe if we could just zoom in just on LSD for a minute, because I don't know a ton about it. I mean, I know a lot about more of like the, I guess you would call more plant-based psychedelics, but LSD, I guess in modern form, is it mostly like synthetic? Like it's mostly lab made?
So the impact that LSD has on the brain is very similar to the impact that psilocybin mushrooms have on the brain. So the fMRI scans that you saw, which are from Imperial College, were essentially a comparison. Maybe you can even pull it up. It's like placebo versus psilocybin, right? And placebo, it shows that there's some connectivity between the two hemispheres of the brain, but not a lot. Whereas with psilocybin, it's like there's a ton of activity between those two. And I interviewed a neurologist about this, and he had a very helpful correction, which was it's not that there are new neuronal connections. It's that these old pathways are finally being reopened and reactivated. And some of these pathways we may not have used from the age of one or two. So they're pre-verbal in a way. But at some point, our brain and those neurons were activated. And when we get depressed, or when we struggle with addiction, or when we have OCD or anxiety, what happens is the dendrites in the brain, which are sort of these neuronal things, they start to die away. And so when we take a psychedelic, it helps them to reactivate, to open up again, to reconnect. And the metaphor that is often used to describe this experience is for any surfer or skateboard or not, any snowboarders or skiers, you know, the best time to snowboard or ski is after a fresh powder has come down. And what we can do then with that fresh powder is we can, you know, ski and navigate new pathways that, you know, weren't necessarily accessible to us before, because normally it's these ruts that we all go down. And so when we take a high dose of a psychedelic, it's like a fresh kind of layer of snow that falls down. And that makes it, from a neuroplasticity perspective, easier to shape and integrate new behaviors that are supportive. The core difference between LSD and psilocybin is that LSD is a synthetic. For that reason, it's much easier to take a lot of LSD at once. Obviously, when you eat mushrooms, you can only take in so much before it, you know, starts to hurt your gut and feels uncomfortable and you want to puke it up. You know, the max might be 10 to 12 grams for most people, which is still, as you know, a lot. But it's hard to eat more than that. There are some folks like Kyle Kingsbury who have eaten as much as 30 grams, which is insane. And I don't ever recommend trying that. But it's hard to take in all that matter. Whereas with LSD, you can do 10x that. And the risk is that, and this is what happened in the 60s, people were just taking way too much. And so this aspect of microdosing, which is a tenth of a regular dose done two or three times per week, more as like a vitamin or a supplement rather than as a deep psychedelic experience. What's beautiful about LSD is that it really helps with cognitive performance and function. It's more active with dopamine than psilocybin mushrooms. And dopamine, as we know, is tied to focus, attention, and motivation. So a lot of people, instead of taking Adderall, Ritalin, Vyvanse, modafinil, instead of drinking six coffees in a day, we'll actually just start to microdose with LSD. And it allows for the same level of focus, attention, and motivation without the intensity or stress of some of these other psychiatric medications that individuals might take.
Well said. And that's why it's so popular in like computer coders and anybody that's doing like computer engineering work, people building apps, people sitting at a screen and looking at coding all day. I mean, it seems like LSD is incredible for these guys that are just looking at numbers and letters on a screen. They're able to just process it so much better. Whereas it looks like psilocybin is working more on serotonin. At least that's my understanding.
Correct. Okay. Correct. And so the sort of pattern there, and that's a great comparison, Evan, is with psilocybin, a lot of folks who have been on SSRIs, who maybe struggle with depression, who are looking for a more therapeutic application of microdosing will tend to work with psilocybin, whereas those who are more interested in cognitive function and performance, as you mentioned, there's a deep, rich history with Silicon Valley and LSD, they may end up microdosing because there's a playfulness that can be brought to the table with microdoses of LSD that simply is not present with these other medications like modafinil, Ritalin, and Vyvanse. And then my favorite utility of LSD is going beyond just the computer and the laptop and taking a microdose and going hiking with a friend or you know, I do coaching sessions where I'll take a client out hiking and we microdose together and we start to unpack and navigate that. And that's really beautiful because there's just something that's deeply healing and connected about being in nature when you're on psilocybin, when you're on LSD, when you're taking a psychedelic. And so it's fun to play around with some of these in the set and setting, the environments in which we're taking these substances and see, oh, what about with yoga? What about with breath work? What about with, you know, I many years ago, I lived in New York City and I did about 6 months of therapy and I microdosed psilocybin as part of that therapeutic process. So the really fun aspect of this low dose work is you can combine it with other modalities and it has this sort of synergistic 1+1=3 impact on healing and transformation.
So is there any place to microdose psilocybin LSD at the same time?
Can you clarify what you mean by that?
So if you're going to go out for a hike, are you going to take 0.2 grams of psilocybin and then you're going to take a microdose of LSD at the same time? Is there a place to mix those?
That would be more advanced, right? And so the way we talk about psychedelics through our practitioner training program is psychedelics are a skill that we cultivate. And so what I tell folks is if you're pretty new to this, just stick with one substance for now, like get a sense of how mushrooms work or get a sense of how ketamine works. Or get a sense of how LSD works. And then as you become more aware of how it impacts you, then you might start to experiment with, I would probably do it the opposite as what you mentioned. Let's do LSD first thing in the morning because it lasts a lot longer. It can last anywhere from 10 to 12 hours. And then maybe about halfway through, re-up with a microdose of psilocybin and see how that feels. So that can certainly happen. Some people also, as part of a microdosing protocol, Evan, they'll microdose with psilocybin on two of the days and they'll microdose with LSD in one of the days. So on a Monday, they'll take psilocybin. On a Wednesday, they'll take LSD. And on a Friday, they'll take psilocybin. So that is also possible and an option. But again, what I tell folks who are new to this, we even have a 6-week group coaching experience where I coach people through a microdosing protocol. I say, if you're new to this, start low and go slow, you know, like start with one medicine. You can always take more. You can't necessarily take less. And I think that sort of easing in to the psychedelic landscape can help to mitigate a lot of the potential risk that comes about when we start to do very high doses of psychedelics.
Yeah, amazing. And people can check out. So thethirdwave.co. I love the menu. It's a really fancy, geeky menu because when you click on it, you have this entire drop down of all these different substances, what you call psychedelic guides. You can click into each specific compound. And then in the bottom right there, you have what you call the ultimate guide to microdosing, where you can look through all of this. You can read more about dosing because a lot of this, unfortunately, it's still so underground for people, and there's a lot of fear that's still instilled with people. They're worried about what are they going to do? Where do they get it? How's the source? How's the quality? What if this? What if that? So, you know, I think what you've done here is amazing to just show people, look, these are compounds that were, quote, legal for hundreds of thousands of years of human evolution. These things were never illegal and they were never associated with you being a bad person or you, quote, breaking a law or you, quote, getting in trouble with. Like this idea of these substances being somehow illegal or wrong or unethical or immoral or whatever, that is such new brainwashing.
It's propaganda.
Yeah, it's propaganda. Yeah, agreed. And so I want people to just know that I want you to change the way you perceive the issues of like the war on drugs and all of that. This is all so brand new to the human experience. I've seen countless papers. If you type in, I love your intro to this, and I hope it inspires people to look more, but just the ancient use of all this stuff. Like this is not a new thing to the human condition.
Not at all. And the points you're bringing up are very salient. These are, in fact, anti-addictive. There's clinical research that exists from institutions like NYU and Johns Hopkins that shows how effective psychedelics are at treating addiction. I have a lot of people that I know in my personal life and professional life who, you know, they struggled with alcohol addiction and alcoholism for a long time. They've been in AA for a long time, and they deepened that practice by working with psychedelics. And it's not breaking sobriety necessarily because the intention of it is for deep awareness. And I think that's where intention really matters. We all know people who have done way too much LSD at a Grateful Dead show or at a Fish show, or know people who took way too many mushrooms at a rave or a festival one time. You can certainly disassociate. You can certainly just get high. You can certainly abuse these substances in certain ways. And what's great about them is they're incredibly safe. And when used with intention and responsibility, I obviously have my own bias, but I don't know of another modality that can have the immediate and profound impact that psychedelics can have on our brain, on our body, on our mental health, on our emotional well-being, on our creativity. Across the board, these are catalytic. These are incredibly profound, and they require a provider, a guide, education that is helpful, that helps you to feel safe. And I think that's the big key difference, Evan. It's like, you know, the difference between just taking mushrooms at home by yourself and seeing what happens, and doing it with maybe a coach or a guide or a therapist, or even having a friend who's just sitting there, who's present for you. The difference can be profound. And I think that's more and more now that I've been in this space for 10 years, trained hundreds of practitioners, facilitated thousands of experience, reached millions of people through our media platform. It's like, now what I'm really focused on is, this is happening. The cat's out of the bag. Pandora's box has been open when it comes to psychedelics. Now we need to ensure that all of the new people who are coming into this can find a really safe and ethical provider to work with, because that can often be the difference between profound healing and an experience that goes pretty sideways.
Yeah, well said. I could be wrong, but it seems like in terms of these compounds and accessibility, it seems like ketamine would probably be the easiest, most accessible in a clinical setting at this time. Because if you go on Google Maps right now in any major city or even in smaller cities, you can put in ketamine and you're going to find likely a clinic where there's an MD, a DO, a nurse practitioner, someone where you could typically walk in, go through a little bit of an intake process, potentially get IV, which you mentioned before we hit record, you know, that would be your preferred method. IV's been amazing for me. Would you say that's the most widely, like publicly available, where you just go on Google and find it and get it done?
So ketamine is a Schedule 3 substance in the United States, and that means that it has medical value, that a medical value has been established specifically for anesthesia. So ketamine is widely used in emergency rooms and hospitals, but also for depression. The FDA has approved esketamine, which is a patented ketamine for treatment-resistant depression. It's a substance called Spravato that's made by Johnson & Johnson. Because it's Schedule 3, ketamine can also be prescribed off-label, meaning it's very similar to medical marijuana, where it's you don't even need to have a clinical diagnosis necessarily to be prescribed ketamine. You can be prescribed it for a number of things and issues. It's legal everywhere. It's also a great starting medicine because it only lasts, as you've experienced, you know, maybe 90 minutes to 2 hours. If it's done within a safe container, it usually doesn't lead to a quote unquote bad trip. There's also quite a few companies that facilitate from the safety of your own home, which if you have a clinical diagnosis or you're really struggling with something, I would not recommend that. Go in to see a practitioner or provider first. But I've done at-home ketamine treatment with lozenges, and it's been very useful. So by far, that's the most accessible and widely available substance at this time, but it's not a classic psychedelic necessarily. It is a disassociative. It acts on a very different way compared to mushrooms and LSD. I think it's useful, more useful than SSRIs, as an example, or other psychiatric medications, but not necessarily as useful as psilocybin, LSD, and ayahuasca. And so as part of our practitioner training program, one metaphor that we teach our practitioners is the lotus flower metaphor, which I'll briefly describe here. So the lotus flower is the symbol of enlightenment in Buddhism. And the idea with the lotus flower is that there's a seed that's planted, that seed is nourished, and it blossoms into something beautiful. And so when we're looking at the three stages of that, it's how do we first have really healthy soil that we're planting that seed into? It's what we call tilling the soil, and that's trauma and therapeutic work. Ketamine and MDMA, which will soon be approved by the FDA to treat PTSD, it'll happen this year. Ketamine and MDMA, also known as ecstasy, are two of the best medicines to do that healing and therapeutic work. Once we've tilled the soil, we have a healthy environment in which to plant that new seed of self. Psilocybin and LSD at higher doses initiate this ego-dissolving experience, this death and rebirth experience. And so there's a new seed of self that's planted in that process. And then integration is, how do we nourish our body, our mind, our self after that experience? Think of it as the water and the sunlight, you know, and these practices for integration are meditation, healthy communication, breath work, yoga, eating healthier, exercising more. There's a lot of practices that we can weave in, behavioral change that we can weave in that helps us to become more centered, better regulated, more present, more kind. And then things like ayahuasca, iboga, 5-MeO-DMT, these are the medicines that we use towards the tail end of that process that really helps that flower to fully blossom. So, and what I tell folks who are interested in this work is patience is helpful. A lot of people hear about psychedelics and they're like, I want everything immediately. And I often tell folks, this could be a path that you're on. I mean, I myself have been working with psychedelics for 15 years now, and I'm still unpacking and unraveling and learning. I was working with psychedelics for 7 or 8 years before I even drank ayahuasca the first time, for 10 years before I smoked 5-MeO-DMT the first time. So I tell folks, easier way in, start with microdosing, start with ketamine, it's legal. And then as you start to become more involved in the space, more paths, more connections, more opportunities will open up. I mean, even at Third Wave, we have a free community platform. So we have an app, you can download Third Wave's community. And as people are becoming more interested in this, they can learn and connect with people from all over the world who are also on this path.
Amazing. And you have a book too, and it's on Amazon. And it's titled Microdosing Psychedelics, A Practical Guide to Upgrade Your Life. So people can get that. I mean, if you're listening, you could literally get the Kindle like right this second for $5. Like, that's a steal for this amount of knowledge. And just to open your mind to this stuff. And, you know, when you say like the lotus flower and Buddhism, people may go, oh man, that doesn't resonate with me. Like, I'm XYZ religion. Well, there's another book. I haven't read it yet, but Graham Hancock wrote the foreword. It's called The Immortality Key,
which is fantastic.
Oh, have you read it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, cool. I interviewed Brian for the podcast as well.
Did you?
The podcast. Yeah, it was fantastic.
Cool. Okay. So we'll link to that episode. But I was reading like an interview that he did about this, and just some of the Greek history and even some of the origins.
Early Christian.
History. The early Christian stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. I grew up very religious, like in a pretty religious family in the Midwest outside Grand Rapids. And so I was at church, you know, every Sunday for the first 18 years of my life. And so reading that book was a huge mind opener, because it was like, oh, what if the early communion in the Christian church actually had psychedelics in it? That's part of the sort of argument that he makes in The Immortality Key, because when Christianity became the official religion of the Roman Empire in the early 4th century, all of that had to be taken out because Roman Catholicism was the new structure for the Roman Empire, essentially. So they couldn't have people just taking psychedelics at random. So I think that, again, from a Western lens, I mentioned the Buddhism angle because a lot of people can resonate with that developmental path. But from a Western angle, there's also, as we've talked about, a really rich history of use with these substances.
That's incredible to think. Okay, I'll have to listen. It looks like Joe Rogan interviewed him also. You interviewed him. So I'm going to have to check that out. That's incredible to think. I mean, if you look back, it makes sense. Like, you're bringing all these people together. You're trying to achieve higher levels of consciousness. You want to achieve that as a group. It makes sense that you're not just going to do that with a cracker and some wine or whatever we're told that it was.
Well, a lot of the early Christian, you know, for the first 250, 300 years of Christianity, it was all underground, right? It was illegal still at that point in time. You were prosecuted if you were a Christian, right? We know the story of Paul and Paul going to the Romans and the Corinthians and, you know, Thessalonica and all these spots to talk about the word of Jesus and being laughed out and, you know, thrown rocks at and all these sorts of things. So there's this hypothesis that, you know, psychedelics were part of this underground movement, because when people worked with this substance, they experienced, let's say, Jesus, in divine flesh as that lineage at that point in time. And then as it started to come above ground, a lot of that was lost. So the history there is really fascinating and interesting. I love history. I studied history in undergrad. It's kind of my forte. And I would encourage folks to, yeah, check out that podcast or the book, whatever resonates with you.
Amazing. Okay. And what's the podcast title, your podcast? What's that called?
It's called The Psychedelic Podcast. So I've recorded maybe 250 episodes at this point in time over the last 7 or 8 years and interviewed a wide range of people from all walks. So if folks are curious about this, they're interested, you mentioned my book. I wrote a new version of it. It's called Mastering Microdosing, which is easy to find on Amazon. And then we have Third Wave as the website as well, and the podcast, Psychedelic Podcast, if folks want to keep diving in.
And then you have the Psychedelic Coaching Institute. It says here, yeah, subtitle is Integrative Training for Personal Transformation and Professional Evolution.
Yeah, and that started a few years ago. We've had about 250 people that have enrolled in that training program. That's very specific to coaches, practitioners, clinicians, people who want to work with psychedelics as a tool in their toolkit within their practice. And so it's about a 9 to 10 month training that has a retreat component. We go to Costa Rica and we do a week-long experience, including a high dose of psilocybin. And, you know, there's a thirst right now. A lot of people who are interested in supporting others and working with psychedelics. And the big differentiator with us is we're more focused on leadership, performance, and well-being. I think these tools can be incredible, not only for therapeutic applications, but also just to become more creative, more inspired, just a better human. And so that's a lot of what we focus on in that training program. And so I would encourage folks, if they want to check that out, you know, we're happy to offer a $500 discount to your audience. And, you know, we can probably something, you know, actually we'll just use Evan Brand 500. So if folks are listening to this and they want to potentially get a discount to that, you can use the code Evan Brand 500 and we can make that happen. Amazing. I just thought of that on the spot.
Awesome. No,
that's probably easy.
Yeah, let's roll with it. That's beautiful. Yeah, this looks really neat. And if people are wanting to integrate this, I mean, I think it's an incredible tool. It's helped me. It's transformed my life in so many ways. It's hard to put into words if people haven't experienced it. You know, I told you before we hit record that when I interviewed a doctor who runs a ketamine clinic, I interviewed her as a complete newbie. I hadn't even tried ketamine yet. And so for her to try to put some of this stuff into words, some of the things you feel and the closed eye visuals and these different perceptions, you can't comprehend it until you actually do it. And then after my first or second session, I was like, oh, that's what she was talking about. Totally different than psilocybin. I would agree. But let me ask you about this, because I saw a trending video. I think this was on Instagram or TikTok. I just want to get your opinion on it. There's almost kind of like this anti-cannabis movement in a way. So this video, okay, it's a short clip, and it's this guy looking at his hand. And he basically says, the caption was something along the lines of like, since I stopped smoking, I'm experiencing life again. And there's just all these comments of people almost bashing cannabis in a way, saying that they were put into a state of maybe disassociation, maybe you would call it depersonalization or derealization, and now they're coming out of it. But for me, I've seen it actually do the opposite. I've seen things become enhanced. I've seen life become more real. So are you thinking these people are just abusing it? There's, you know, the optimal dose is okay, and then the people that are taking too much, maybe they're doing oils or extremely high THC, that they are disassociating, they're having derealization. What's your opinion on that? Because there's thousands of comments like, yeah, can't wait to get off of it. And now there's Reddit threads. There's one called Leaves, where it's people just like bashing cannabis the whole time. I'll never touch it again. It did this to my life, etc.
I think cannabis is closer to alcohol than psychedelics. I think I want to emphasize that cannabis can be a very useful tool if used sparingly within an experience that has some level of containment, meaning ceremonially or in a ritual or in a circle, or even from what I understand, the way that you utilize it. I myself have been smoking cannabis for 16, 17 years now. The first 10 was off and on, here and there, occasionally. The last 5 have been a little bit more consistently, to the point where I've had to be intentional about taking time off. because cannabis does have a bit more of a sticky tendency. It's easy to do pretty often. You know, it's widely accessible and available now. A lot of people, like, I don't really drink any alcohol, so I can rationalize it in terms of, you know, I'll smoke weed instead of drink alcohol, which, again, is probably net healthier overall. But as we learn more about cannabis, we do learn that it has overall a negative impact on cognition and the brain if it's done too often. And this is especially true for developing brains, but it's also true even for people like you and I who are in our 30s and, you know, we're interested in performance and being at our best. I do think cannabis can at times be a crutch. And it's just, we have to check ourselves about the frequency in which we're using it. And there are some people, as you mentioned, like, who are doing dabs, who are doing huge edibles. Like, I don't do any of that. I just, every now and then I smoke some flower or vape some flower. But even I still notice that, you know, I'm bored. Might be nice to smoke a joint or, you know, like, I don't have much going on this Saturday. So I check myself, and I believe that my life would overall be probably, I'd have more energy, more focus, and all those sorts of things if I wasn't smoking cannabis. Because the other thing, it can impact testosterone levels and specifically sperm motility for men. And so if men are, if you're in a family or you're married or you want to get someone pregnant, not using cannabis is preferred. So it's tricky. I would say it's one of those things where I hope I explained some of the nuance. Like, it can be really good even at helping people get off psychiatric medications, at dealing with PTSD. If it's done every now and then, it can be, you can go really, really deep with it. I think the challenge is it's pretty easy to get, in my experience, stuck in it and do it a little bit too often, maybe.
Yeah, well said. No, and there's a lot of cool papers coming out now specifically for PTSD.
Right.
Like Normal, they've done amazing at publishing stuff on this. Yeah. And I forget what the numbers were, but it was some huge percent, like 72% of people with PTSD, you know, rated it as a profound transformative tool for helping them escape the PTSD and or get off of psychiatric medications, that typical antipsychotics and those sort of drugs. So, yeah, I think
– and that's why I think it's a win overall and for many people, Evan. You know, like, cannabis is better than Abilify and SSRIs and Wellbutrin, and like, it's a step up, and it's a step up. There's more steps above it that we can go into, and that's where I think mushrooms and MDMA and some of these deep psychedelic medicines can get deeper to the root core of what's going on to heal the trauma.
I've seen some of the research on the brain. I mean, it looks like, I mean, there's probably multiple mechanisms, but it looks like long term, if it's too much, it's affecting dopamine pathways. But what if it's opening you up to so much new experience, new creativity, and then you just counteract that by supplementing amino acids to help the same pathway? So that's why I look at it. I'm like, okay, this is helping this guy sleep better. It's helping him with anxiety. He has less pain. He has more creative ideas. He enjoys music more. He enjoys his relationships more. He finds that he bonds to his partner more with that. But maybe he suffers a little in the brain fogs there, maybe a little bit of it, like, motivation's down. Well, we throw in tyrosine, we throw in some adaptogenic herbs, and then boom, we've either matched where he was before, we've even doubled where he's at before with that. But I'm the same as you. I mean, I try to just use it low, like not high dose. I find if people are doing like, I mean, some of these waxes and stuff I'm seeing on the market, it's like 80, 90% THC. That's insane.
It's insane.
Versus, I read something, I don't know how accurate it is, but that the, I guess it was the DEA, based on their confiscated cannabis from the 90s, the average THC percentage was somewhere around 4%, where now you're seeing flower at like 30.
27 to 35.
Yeah. So, I mean, I try to look for the low, I mean, especially too.
I like just, the outdoor grown. Like, I have one now that's, I think, about 14% THC, 15% CBD, and it's an organic outdoor grown. And I prefer that, having the high CBD to balance the THC, because if it's just way too much THC, I can go into paranoia and it's just like too much in some cases.
I agree. I mean, when I'm telling people clinically, like, hey, you might want to look into this, I tell them, hey, stick to 15% THC max or less. Take one or two puffs of a vape, or, you know, if you're into a pipe or some other like smoking tool, one or two puffs of weight. And you're getting maybe 3 milligrams per puff, depending on how big your puff is.
Right.
That seems to be a great starting place, 3 to 6 milligrams for people. And then just wait. And it's changed my life.
Yeah, it's changed mine as well.
Yeah. Cool. Well, we'll have to link to all this. This is a lot of great stuff. I really think that you're a big player in driving this thing to the masses. So I know it can be an exhausting journey when you're trying to break through decades of, as you mentioned, I mean, a lot of this is just straight propaganda. So,
misinformation and stigma. Yeah. And I love this work. You know, I mean, it's certainly tiring. I have a lot of energy, but yeah, I've seen it just change so many lives and have such a profound impact on so many people that, you know, I absolutely love doing this. And I would encourage folks to reach out, whether that's going to thethirdwave.co, checking out the book, Mastering Microdosing, pinging us about the practitioner training program with the discount, Evan Brand 500. But let's stay in touch. I feel like your community would, you know, they'll really benefit from exploring this deeper. And I'd love to be supportive in that process.
My pleasure. Okay, last thing. So the MDMA, I read about that. So you're thinking that it's this year that the FDA's...
They completed phase 3 clinical trials. By August, they will have, I think it's the DEA will communicate basically approval. The FDA will communicate final approval for PTSD. The DEA then has 90 days to reschedule MDMA as a Schedule 3 or Schedule 4 substance, which means that it can be prescribed for medical use. So we would expect, and the data is outstanding, you know, as you hinted at, I think people are... it's about 3 times as effective as typical interventions for PTSD. So I would expect by the end of this year into early next year, the beginning of accessibility to MDMA as a medicine, which is amazing. Fantastic.
Amazing. Well, Paul, hey, man, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for joining me today. And we'll chat more soon. If that goes through, we'll have to do a whole like part 2 on MDMA, a deep dive there. I know it was used a lot clinically and psychology, marriage, counseling settings. Marriage, I mean, I know there's like deep roots in that. So I think for, you know, helping to mend relationships, that's a huge piece. So let's hope to talk about that soon.
I would love that, Evan. Thanks so much for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
All right. Take it easy. All right. Thank you so much. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did. This is a fascinating piece of life. Psychedelic compounds and compounds that alter your consciousness and alter your mind have always fascinated me, especially the historical and ancient and ritualistic use of these compounds, which has guided humanity for millennia. This is just incredible. I hope this was at least a good intro to some of that for you. And you can check out Paul's Third Wave, as well as the Psychedelic Coaching Institute, if you want to learn more and dive deeper into this. As I mentioned in the beginning, let's see if we can get Paul Saladino, the other Paul that I know, let's see if we can get him to open up. Let's get him to run some functional labs again. We ran him before, but we didn't end up doing a piece of content about it, and we really should. This is an important piece of the puzzle. We need people like him who have bigger voices than me to bring functional medicine to the masses. This idea that we can just show off blood work and say we're perfectly healthy is not adequate. There's many, many functional issues that we can identify that really drive the mood issue. Like if you have anxiety, you're not going to see something on your blood test that says you have anxiety. If you have depression, you're not going to see a marker on your blood that says you have depression. If you have a sleep problem or you have stomach cramping or you have IBS, you're not going to see information that's going to help you on blood. So this idea that like, look at my blood work, I'm so healthy, it's just not the full picture. So check out the YouTube link below. Go to Paul's video on his blood test. Make a comment, make a note about getting some functional labs with Evan, and you want to hear or see a piece of content about that. Let's see if we can get him to do it, because this is a huge important thing. If we can get this to a few extra million people this year, that'll be incredible for the greater good of humanity. I want everyone on the street corner to know about functional medicine. This is so important. We're in a really, really critical place where I see people suffering more than ever in the last decade of me doing this. It's even more important now than ever to get this stuff to everyone. So yeah, do that little fun project with me. If you want to get yourself some Hydration Essentials, my best-selling electrolyte, which is way better than Element. Sorry, Rob Wolf. I mean, it's decent, but like ours is better. So Hydration Essentials, that is on my store, auraroots.com. Get you some. It's incredible. Filtered water, ice, and a scoop of it will make your day significantly better. You should feel less everything, like less irritable, less anxious, like just the calming aspect of having proper minerals in your body. It's very, very soothing. The vitamin C is going to keep you well. A lot of kids at my children's school just falling apart with illnesses. knock on wood, my kids stay strong through it. And I think part of that, I also give them my children's professional multi. I give them my children's Probiomyces Junior, which is a probiotic, but then we're also giving them a half scoop in the morning of the electrolyte so they can drink that down and get at least a gram of vitamin C. So check it out. Keep yourself well. Get yourself better. Look forward to talking with you again soon. If you need help clinically, evanbrand.com is the website. Reach out to me. Let me know what's going on. So many people reach out after 5, 6, 7 years of listening to me, and they say, hey, I wish I would have reached out 5 years ago. I just tried to do it myself. Look, I tried to do it myself too. It's fine to ask for help. I'm here for you. I can help you. I've been through this thousands of times in my own personal journey and struggles. I can help you. Just ask for help. You'll spend a little bit of money, but it's going to be cheaper than the new iPhone or the latest 85-inch LED TV, and it's going to change your life, how you respond in your relationships, your libido, your sleep, your energy, your mood can all be better if you get the proper data. So test, don't guess with your health. evanbrand.com. Talk with you later. Bye-bye.